Welcome to the At the Eyepiece Show. This is an astronomy-based podcast that is devoted to discussing astronomical equipment, stargazing tips, observing reports, and equipment reviews. We don't focus on the science of astronomy. There are plenty of shows that do that. The focus of At the Eyepiece is the visual observers, those backyard stargazers that enjoy taking their telescopes under the stars, and those individuals wishing to join our ranks. After all, what matters to stargazers is what's at the eyepiece. Well, good afternoon out there, my fellow backyard stargazers, and welcome to this episode of At the Eyepiece. Yes, we are live, and this is actually our first episode for 2016. And we've got a lot of good information coming up here. We have our special guest. And before we get to our special guest, let me just go ahead and give a shout out to anyone that wants to jump on in our chat room. Can go ahead and sign on in, ask any questions that you may like in there for our guest or even for myself as we progress through the show. And of course, we are live right now. We're going to be live, probably anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes here. And if you would like to call in and ask any questions here for our special guest, which I'll go ahead and introduce here shortly, you can go ahead and call in the special guest call-in number. That number is 760-454-1129. Now, a couple of brief announcements here. Got some big plans here for 2016 for the show. Our goal is to have a special guest every single month and to put out at least two episodes per month. As we get approaching here to NEAF 2016, I sure hope to be able to do the live episode from NEAF as well. So that is going to be an announcement coming up here shortly. And we are going to go ahead and have a lot of fun there. I hope to be able to make it, have some moving the week before. So we're going to try to do that and incorporate that in here. And, of course, we have some announcements coming up, a huge announcement, which an event is happening in August, which I'll get to in a future episode. But let's get to the important stuff here. We have a very, very special guest joining us here for today for the show. We have Professor Billy Hicks from the Space Foundation. Now, Professor Hicks is an associate professor of education at Mount Lao State Community College and a teacher liaison for the Space Foundation. Billy frequently visits local schools to perform outreach and to perform and encourage STEM education in general with a focus on science and astronomy, and of course to assist teachers to engage their students in science. Yes, he's pretty busy. So also involved is he's the teacher liaison for the Space Foundation, and he is going to go ahead and share all of that information on that fantastic foundation as well. So welcome to the show, Professor Billy Hicks. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, John.
You are very, very welcome.
Great. Well, great to be with you today.
Well, I know you're a bit under the weather, so I want to say thank you for keeping up and staying. I know you are someone that is very, very busy, and we certainly appreciate the time coming on board and sharing some of your experience.
Oh, well, and thank you for the kind words, but now, you know, I tried to run away from teaching three different times and get a real job, but, you know, I was probably kind of destined to this, but now someone who's really doing great outreach, and I don't know how you manage your time to do it all, and that's John, that's you. I'm so impressed with all that you're able to do and your coffee shop outreach that you do there in Murfreesboro at night. What a great program. I was honored to get to be with you one time, but now...
That's right. We were honored to have you
amazing.
Up there.
Well, yeah. It is amazing to watch you know, the people interact with you, and so excited, and what a difference you make. And it's the combination of all of us that make our world just a little bit better place, whether it's through astronomy or something else. But I love using that astronomy as that hook, particularly with young people, because it is such an inspirational tool to be able to walk into a school and see kids that might even say, I don't even like science, you know, and that's okay.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and but boy, you take them on a journey through the night sky, and I have a portable planetarium, so take them on a journey through the night sky, and if I could get paid in wows, I wouldn't have to talk to you today, because I'd be on some island somewhere or another going, wow, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with all this money.
I hear you.
But now, what wonderful work you're doing in two podcasts a month. I really don't know how you juggle it all, and I really admire the work that you do with the technology that you test out their scopes and equipment. And you know, every time I get a new piece of equipment, it takes me a year or two to ever figure it out. And so I say, wow, you know, John just throws it out there. That is one smart guy. So way to go. And good for you for the outreach that you do.
Well, you're too kind. Thank you. And then we had a blast when you came up to the coffee shop. It's been such a positive, fun thing. You know, I have to admit, sometimes I was really tired that night, just the other night. I said, no, you know, it's going to be clear. I'm going to go up to the coffee shop just for maybe an hour. Well, it turned out to be, what, maybe 2.5 hours? And exactly, as you say, if I was paid with wows, boy, I would have had it set. You know, even for showing something as simple to us as the moon, people are just blown away. And, you know, that's why we do it, because there is such a splendid universe out there. All you got to do is look up. And it's amazing, amazing what you can see out there. So I appreciate all those that kind words from you there. Really do.
Well, you're welcome.
Let's get with you here. Let's see. Now, I usually like to get a little bit of history from our guests and how they kind of got hooked on astronomy. So was your particular pathway, not only to education, but astronomy in general, was that something that you knew you wanted early in life, or was that something that you developed later on?
Well, it was early in life, and then it kind of got sidetracked. And when I was, now, I grew up in what we would call rural poverty, and going to town when I was growing up was going to Lynchburg, Tennessee. Now, they didn't have much of a grocery store, and about once a week, usually on a Saturday, I would go with my mom, and we would go to Shelbyville, Tennessee, to the grocery store. But now, you're talking about great dark skies. Now, I live in a community, grew up in a community that doesn't even exist anymore, but now, I will tell you, I was kind of a closet science geek, astronomy fan. This is really sad, but it was that the situation was just this way. But the school that I attended was a grades 1-8, and only had three teachers. You had the same teacher first, second, and third. You had the same teacher in fourth, fifth, and sixth, and then seventh and eighth. And the teacher that I had, I must not have been paying any attention at all. I barely remember first, second, and third grade. But now, boy, do I remember fourth, fifth, and sixth. Teacher that I had never been to college.
Wow.
She had been grandfathered in when the state required people to have a college degree, but hey, if you're already teaching and you hadn't been to college, that was okay. You keep on. So I was in the fifth grade in the spring of 1969. We were about to land on the moon, and every day my teacher told us that for every male child in her room, there was only one career path that was worthy. And it was a lot of biblical terms. And this was at a time where She taught us Sunday school class. I mean, there was more Bible training in our classroom than it was regular instruction. But anyway, she lined us up in front of the, and I remember it was a spring, lined us up in front of the classroom. We had to say what we were going to do. And, of course, every boy knew he had to do something with agriculture. Every girl knew that the highest calling she could reach would be a farmer's wife. And I was miserable. Now, I thought, we are poor. Why would I want to stay? And I had clippings in my little old bedroom of all the astronauts. People would give me magazines. I'd cut out pictures. And so I was this closet geek. So sure enough, I stepped out. And I used this with a lot of the kids I visit too. I stepped out in front of the class, and it was my turn to speak what I was going to become someday. And so so we always had to say something like, well, be a good citizen and we'll, you know, add to the common good or something. And then you had to go into detail. Well, I said, you know, this summer we're going to land on the moon. And I thought, sure, we'd be on Mars by the time I was in high school. I said, yeah, who would want to miss that? So I'm going to work for NASA. Well, my fifth grade teacher, bless her heart, she was about the size of me and you together. And she kind of rocked a few times out of the chair, and then she kind of popped up. And, boy, she's come after me and drove me into the front of the room and spanked me in front of the whole class and told me what is wrong with America. Now, that's my environment. Now, I was eaten up with astronomy. I mean, had dark skies, too poor to ever have a telescope. I would check out books, you know, all about the planets, and I'd get books on stars, you know. What a great place it would have been to have an app back then to hold up against the night sky. But so I loved the night sky. I went off to college, and I was the only one out of my fourth, fifth, and sixth grade class that went. But went to college, didn't have a clue what to do, and so my background was kind of like yours, because I think yours was in computer science, wasn't it, or something other like that?
Yes.
Information systems? That's
what exactly. Exactly.
Well, I was clueless. Nobody in my family had ever been to college, and I could barely read the catalog. And so I was blessed. I had a perfect roommate, and he was talking about, well, he was going to major in computer science. What am I going to major in? I said, well, I think I'm going to do the same thing. I just took everything he took, you know, just whatever classes he took, well, that's what I took too. Now, during my college years, I really regret that I did not take more physics, more astronomy. It wasn't it just like it didn't fit for a while. And then got out as a computer programmer. My father got to be in ill health. I came back to the farm to help 1 year, and I moved back to Shelbyville, and I had to find a job. And I thought, well, computer programming just ate you alive. You know, there was no free time, and I needed to be able to feed cows. And I thought, I'm going to go get a job teaching school. They get through at 3 o'clock. And so that's exactly, I didn't have a degree or anything. I went by the superintendent's office in Shelbyville, Tennessee, and I'm sure I was so cocky. It was like, here I am, and I could save your school system. You just hire me. And he said, well, you could start the computer program here. And I said, oh, yes, I could. And I love teaching. Now, boy, it didn't pay nothing, but it was a fun year. And actually, I stayed 3. Once I kind of got the program started, I hated to bail on them. And I saw kids so desperate for some kind of spark. And of course, this would have been in the late 70s. And STEM wasn't kicked about, but it was very apparent that we had kids that needed a spark. They needed some inspiration. And the space program was still, you know, active at that time. You know, and that was a spark for me and for a lot of people. Kids today don't even have that. But anyway, I did leave teaching. I went back to being a computer programmer. I really missed it. And I started teaching at Motlow College. I started teaching part-time. I thought, well, I'll just teach a little bit. One night a week. And it turned into a full-time job. And part of the deal when I came on board with Motlow was I want to be able to visit schools and work with teachers. And I did programs after school for teachers and stuff, a lot of them in technology, a lot in science. And then I got so frustrated working with teachers because they were so overwhelmed that I could tell that the effort I was putting into teachers, it wasn't getting drifting down. It trickled down. There was not much trickle-down effect. And so about 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, I thought, okay, forget this teacher stuff. I still do some of it. But I'm just going to go do programs for kids. And so all along there, you know, I bought a, when I finally got to where I was making a living, I bought a telescope, you know, and I thought, oh, you know, I just had a little 4-inch reflector or something out there. And it was, I'm like, oh, I have arrived. And and so I just keep buying, just not quite, you know, maybe a good scale, but I just keep buying toys along. And there is a piece that I find in the night sky. And I have to tell your listeners and you a secret. I have a little observatory. And I have a telescope set up in it. Now, I told you I grew up in real rural poverty. My father could not read or write. My mom was a high school graduate. But anyway, I feel such peace and this wonderment under the night sky, and I'm by myself, that I play Christmas music all year long in my observatory because now when other people show up, I don't torment them with Christmas music, but just by myself, I play Christmas music all year long because it is as close to what I could dream that Christmas might be, that feeling when I was a kid. That is what astronomy and looking at the stars does for me. So very fortunate to arrive at this point in life, and not only I get to enjoy it, but to turn around and visit schools. I have visited a little over 11,000 students and teachers this year.
This year?
And it's this school year, yes, this school year. And it's not to turn them all into astronomers, but to show, and I love going to rural schools. I was up in your neck of the woods just about 2 weeks ago at Kittrell, a school there in Redford County going out close to Cannon County. But I've been there several times before. Even did a star party out there. Very rural, high poverty, and the kids, when they're in my planetarium, it doesn't make any difference what color you are, whether you're rich or poor. We can all be inspired by the passion of the stars. And so all I've got to do is make sure I'm on my game to be able to not just show the constellations and here's some planets, but to put the story behind it so that it's really being taught so that they really do say, wow, a lot. And so that's the joy that I get to have. But, yes, a little over 11,000 students and teachers so far this year. So
that's
there's
fantastic.
Got to be some kind of record out there somewhere or another.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah.
Share a little bit then about, I mean, that's a fantastic story. It should be so encouraging for others out there. Share a little bit then about, so you bring a planetarium to the different schools and things. What do you find that mostly is there that is engaging or really captivating your student audience there? When you talk about planets, when you talk about the moon, when you talk about just astronomy in general, share a little bit about what you found in all this experience that you have that really captivates them.
Well, I'm going to back up just a bit. Now, there is a gentleman in Alabama who is retired, and he actually came and followed me around for 2 or 3 days last year. Terrarium, sort of like mine. Mine looks like a big blue igloo. It's 24 feet across, but it's really 25 feet across. It's 14 feet tall. And you blow it up with a blower, and you just keep pumping air into it, and when you walk into it, there's a projector and mirror assembly in the very back corner where I sit, and I use a free software that a lot of your listeners might be used to. It's called Stellarium.
Indeed.
And I
yeah.
use that to project the night sky to travel, you know, through the sky. But and then there's a gentleman in Kentucky. Now, I will tell you that all of the programs that I do that are within what I'm going to call the Motlow College service area, and that's about 10 counties in Tennessee, I have a small foundation set up at the college that people have been donating to. Every program, like the program I spoke of at Kitchell, Rutherford County is in the service area at Motlow College. Every program I do is free because I want to target those schools like where I grew up, very poor, you know, we never had a visitor or anything like that.
Right.
But anyway, this gentleman from Alabama who came and followed me around, and he said, you know, he enjoyed the stars. I think he was an engineer and retired. He said, I never get asked back to schools, because I made the comment that even today I am 100% booked as far as 3 days next school year already.
Wow.
And I've got 105 free dates. And all 105 are spoken for. And he said, nobody asked me back. And I said, well, I'm tell you what, you're going to have to think like a teacher. You know, if I just show up at your doorstep and tell you, you need to know this, and I approach it from that viewpoint, you're not going to have as happy customers. You won't be as happy as somebody just telling you what you need to know. And also, these teachers today are under an awful lot of stress, and a lot of them, their principals, do not allow them just to have a program like when we were growing up. You know, if somebody would have showed up at my school, they could have talked about, I want dogs and cats. We would let them talk. You know, it wasn't important, but now it has to be standards-based. So I am very sensitive to the standards those teachers have to teach. And when people say, well, what is the success of your program? It's truly that I teach alongside the teachers. And most of the teachers, when I visit a school for the first time, they're so surprised by that. They're not used to having an outsider. They think it's going to be a real geeky show or something other, and I'm teaching just what they need to teach. Now, in the fourth grade, the general standards are knowing your place in the solar system, knowing the solar system's place in the universe, and moon phases. And so for 45 minutes, when I have one class in the planetarium, it's usually about a 45-minute show, I make sure that we start standing on Earth. We cover those academic vocabulary words like horizon and hemisphere. And then we talk about what is a constellation, and I just pick, like this time of year, constellations they could go out and find easily. So we'll start with Sirius, you know, and we'll go up to the right, there's Orion, up to the right, there's Taurus the Bull. We go back to Sirius, we kind of work our way up and to the left, and we'll go through Canis Minor and then up to Gemini. And I also do the mythology that's behind it, because that is a standard, too. So all of a sudden the teachers go, well, he's not just teaching science. He's doing my language arts as well. In the fifth grade, they drop moon phases. They don't do moon phases. And most of the kids, and I do an app. It's called Moon Globe. And it's a 99-cent app or something on an iPad, but you can just literally fly a few thousand feet over the moon's surface. It is visually, it is beautiful. And so we'll fly around. I do a little history lesson. I talk about landing on the moon and Neil Armstrong. And then we back up and we do moon phases. And so I should finish that up. And that's with fourth grade class. So fifth grade class walks in. We talk about constellations, our place in the solar system, our place in the universe, and I go deep sky. And so this time of the year, we'd always go to M42. You know, we'll go to the Great Orion Nebula, and we talk about a stellar nursery, and we break that word down. What's a nursery? What's stellar mean? And we look at the birth of stars that are taking place there in the birth sac, right, the center of the nebula. And then this time of year still, Andromeda is up. And so we always go to the west, and we'll visit, M31, I guess, Andromeda. And we talk about how Andromeda and the Milky Way are gravitationally attracted to each other. And gravitation attraction is an academic vocabulary word in the fifth grade, so we talk about what does that mean. And then I say, okay, these two objects are gravitationally attracted to each other, and we're crashing into them at 70,000 miles per hour. You know, and there's always this silence, it's like some of them are figuring out, oh, this is not going to be good. And then we'll talk about time scales. And we just have the best time. And usually, if things work well, we work, it's about 4 billion years before the Milky Way and Andromeda crash into each other. And so, yep, that's going to be the end. You know, kids, yeah, that's the end. But then I said, well, it's going to be ugly before that, because as our sun runs out of fuel, it will start to swell and it'll eat Venus. And unfortunately, if it doesn't eat Earth, we're toast, but it will probably eat Earth. Well, of course, and the kids are, now you're talking about having somebody's attention, telling everybody, and they are, they're just eaten up. And I am so fortunate, because most of the schools that I visit, I am the only planetarium visit some of them will ever have until they're adults. Usually, I was in Lawrence County, Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, last week, mm-hmm. and it started a few years ago. I have a former student, because I used to teach science students, and I had a former student there. I visited one school. Well, another school heard about it, so last year I visited two. This year, it was 4 schools. And I was at one school, and I asked every class, how many of you ever been to a planetarium before? I had one student out of 160 that day had been to a planetarium. Yeah. So for 159 people, mm-hmm. I was so honored, because I got to be the first person that introduced them to something like that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I would imagine that, there are not a whole lot of opportunities, as you're saying, and that's what makes what you're doing just so so important out there. Now, let me ask you, being essentially your work for Motlow State Community College, their obviously their support, and you had mentioned that you have created a foundation through them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, is that something that folks can donate to help you out cover these costs?
And,
you want to share that?
I will tell you that I'm actually retired from Motlow. I'd been doing this outreach, but not quite on the same scale. Mm-hmm. Last year, because I retired from the college June 30th, this past June.
Okay.
Now, last year I had worked with about 6,000 students and taught a full load and all the other foolishness that goes with it. And that had been a pretty standard visit 40 to 50 schools. I used spring breaks. I used fall breaks. I used Christmas. I used summer. With all those and a lot of quick, the planetarium is not the only program that I do, but it is by far the most popular program that I
most
do.
Popular.
And
okay.
But about 10 years ago, I was actually doing a star party at a school, and I had this older gentleman come up to me, and he said, "I hear you do this for free." And I said, "Yes," because I had a telescope out, and we'd done a little program, and we're out in the middle of a field, football field, and I had my generator running. We had a projector going, and we just had a big time. And I don't know, we looked at some pictures. Who knows what I talked about that night? And I said, "Yes, sir," because I wanted to look in a telescope. I had no idea what I was going to say. I used to look at the Sears catalog. They had a Christmas catalog, and they always had telescopes in it. And I guess they were $200 or $300 back then, for not much of a telescope. Well, that was $200 or $300 outside the realm of total possibilities for me. But boy, I would you know, I would cut the pages out just in case someday, you know, something might happen. I said I never got to look in one, and I'd be doggone, if, you know, within my power, I'm going to do what I can. And, well, that really got to him, and when he tried to give me just some cash, I said, no, I cannot take that. And he said, well, give me your work address. I'm going to send you a check. And so now I had gotten a few checks from schools and things like that, and I'd tell them no, but, and I have to admit, it wasn't much. I'd fill up my truck with gas. Well, this one was
right.
A little more sizable. And so I went to my college president, who was my best friend, and I said, you know, I think I ought to do something with this because I'm always buying equipment out of my own pocket. Maybe this could be the start of something. Oh, yes, this is an excellent idea, really. Let's start a mm-hmm. foundation. And to be honest with you, if I were advising you, I would really do things a little differently, but I really didn't think it would amount to much, and I really didn't want to fool with money. I know, we all know that if we're in charge of money and something goes haywire, money goes missing, or you're accused of missing money, it's you know, you lose your reputation over it.
Right.
And so my college president said, her name was Mary Lou Apple, that Billy Hall. The college has a foundation. It's called the Motlow College Foundation. Well, they will manage your foundation for you. You'll never have to touch the money. Nobody could ever accuse you of doing anything with the money. But there were a couple of caveats. The state is really managing your foundation. And
right.
You can never touch the principal. You can only spend the interest. That's all. Well, that sounded great to me, and I really thought, oh, someday if it grows to be $1,000, you know, I won't know what to do. And, well, money really started to roll in. Now, my president at that time she's retired also, but she was kind of letting people know, hey, you could help this guy out. Look what he's doing in your community. And I actually had, now remember, you can only spend the interest, and boy, that's not much right now. But I had this one
right.
gentleman come to a star party. I guess this is the power of the stars that you talk about a lot, too. I never met this guy before. He came up to me. He said, I want to help you out because I hear that you, it was one of the public star parties that I do at the parking lot at Motlow College. And we had about 300 people there or so. Most of the star parties that I do, I literally go to the school, and I like small groups. That way, if it's cloudy, it's easy to cancel, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, this guy couldn't get over how great it was. We were just looking at the moon, like you said. He was 65 or 70, and he introduced himself a couple of times, and he was retired. He was a retired banker. He owned businesses. Power of looking in a telescope. After he watched, he looked, and then he stood beside me, and I kind of thought he was kind of weird. I thought, well, I don't know if I'm going to have to run this guy off or not, because he's watching these kids line up and take a look in the telescope, and they're all wow and asking questions and stuff. And he
right.
said, man, this is really something. He said, let me have one of your business cards. So I gave it to him, Billy Hicks, Motlow College Foundation. Do you know that guy wrote me a check for $500,000?
Say again?
Now, that is the power. Yeah. The guy wrote me a check for $500,000. $500,000. And actually, when I got the check in the mail, it was just like, I mean, like if I sent you $10, it was just a note, and inside the note was a check in an envelope. First of all, if I'd written that kind of check, other than the fact it would have bounced, you know, I would have had them drive it over in an armored truck or something. But I called the guy up because I thought, oh.
It has to be an error.
You know, that's right. It's got an error or it's a joke or something. I called this
right.
guy up. He said, no. He said, don't have any kids. You know, then want Uncle Sam to get it. He said, this is money well spent. He said, go cash it. Now, He did get a tax break because my foundation, because the way it's set up, is tax deductible. The bad part about it is the last 2 or 3 years, and actually I've had some other folks that in my foundation is up to about $800,000. And to me, I mean, I thought, wow, you know, that is a pile of money. Well, if you think about it for just a second, if they invest it all in just a CD at 1%, that's $8,000. So when Mary Lou Apple, I spoke of the president, she decided she was going to retire at the end of this June, and she and I were good friends. She called me in one day, and she goes, I'm going to retire. Before somebody else comes in and takes over, we ought to set up your foundation so that you could work for it. And I said, well, here's my problem. $800,000 sounds like a lot of money, but at 1% or 2% interest, that's not a living, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so we're kind of living sometimes on a wing and a prayer. I retired so that I could draw my retirement. And so I'm a returning state employee, which the state allows employees to work 120 days. Well, that's all you can get paid. Now, you could work 365, but you can't get paid for most of those. And so I had to take my retirement so I would be able to take that money plus the money I'm getting from the foundation and put the two of them together, and I've got about one salary.
Right.
And so that's kind of how we're making it work right now. And if anybody's listening, it's MOTLOW, Motlow College, Tallahoma, Tennessee. Yep. If you just ask for the foundation office and say, heard about Billy Hicks, they're used to it. They can handle it from there, and they can tell you about the tax advantages and all kinds of wondrous things. But it is nice to know. Because most of the equipment I bought out of my own pocket. It was long before I had my foundation going. It is nice to know that there were some people, or like that man, who looked in the telescope, and I don't know if the looking through the telescope did it all, but him watching kids line up at a telescope, and kids would jump out of line and they would try to root back in to take another look at something, and he could see that, you know, that there was a spark, there was something happening, and that was worthy of his investment. And so I try to make sure I think about that every day I go to work, that somebody else is helping me too, and be a good steward.
That is fantastic. What a fantastic story that is. And well-deserved, because, you certainly stay busy out there with all of that. So if folks want to go ahead and give to that particular foundation there to help out, as you said, money well spent for that. Money well,
well
spent.
We'll
share a little bit here about being, how did you get involved with being the teacher liaison for the Space Foundation?
Got you. You know that I've done a lot of teacher support and such, and I had a good friend. I worked at NASA. I worked with them full time, 2000 to 2002, but I started working with them as a consultant, and this was in their education department in 1997. And then one of my very best friends at NASA was a gentleman by the name of Jim Kennedy. And what a jewel of a guy, always thinking about somebody else. And he actually ended up being the director of Kennedy Space Center. And when I first met him, he was the head of the solid rocket booster program. But he was just on this upscale, he was in charge of this and this and this. And then he was deputy director at Marshall Space Flight Center, and that's where I was. And I will say, now, my son works mission control for NASA. And some people go, oh, I bet it's because, you, speaking of me, you were geeky and the guy didn't have a choice. I will tell you that the person who really opened the door and the eyes of my son were not me, but it was Jim Kennedy. But anyway, Jim Kennedy was the director of Kennedy Space Center for about 4 or 5 years. And this would have been about 2007 or 8. It was about the end of his tenure. And he called me one day and he said, "Billy, do you know anything about the Space Foundation?" I said, "No, I don't." But I said, "I bet they're a foundation. I bet they mess with space or something." And he just laughed and he said, "I'm going to nominate you to be a teacher liaison." And I said, "Well, how much work's involved? Do they pay anything?" He said, "Well, they don't pay nothing." And I said, "Well, that figures. You know, that's a teacher thing for sure." But he said, "Boy, you'll get a lot of practice." And I thought, "I don't know if I need a lot more practice or not." But anyway, I talked to these folks at Space Foundation, and so I submitted a resume and things like that. And it could have been that I was the only person that submitted one. Who knows?
Oh, boy.
So I was selected as a teacher liaison. The Space Foundation is a outreach group. Well, it's more than an outreach group. They do outreach, but they're a coordinator of a lot of space organizations. They have a huge space fest every year in Colorado, and that's where it's based. And my job with them is they line up schools all across the globe, and then I will teach a class usually through a video conference. Sometimes it's Skype. Sometimes I only email teachers. But I try to get them to think in terms of using the space program and astronomy to integrate that into their curriculum. So I have to really think about, what do you teach? We'll say language arts, and a lot of language arts teachers say, "Well, you know, I just have to teach like nouns and pronouns, and you know, I don't know, you know." And so I have to work to figure out how to take something in astronomy and weave it in a bunch of pronouns and nouns and how, what else
right.
do you teach? And so I am very fortunate. The most distant school that I ever worked with was an elementary school in Hiroshima, Japan.
And, wow.
Now, I would have loved to have been flown out there. They probably needed to see my face, but unfortunately, we did it through video conferencing, and it was kind of cool. I would show up at my college about 9:30 at night in the video conference room, and it was about 8 in the morning there. And so I would teach during the night. And, of course, the college was just empty. And I will, I don't want to get, I'm just dominating the conversation here, but this is our competition. You know, I tell teachers, this is the competition. I noticed that they would carry, I was working with teachers in a real classroom. And I noticed the second day, well, I noticed it the first, but we were having such problems with them understanding Southern that the translation was tough. And so the second day, they obviously found a Southern translator. And I stopped for a moment, and she laughed. But, I mean, I know I sound just fine.
Yeah,
but to them, I sure did not.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And I didn't sound like that Rosetta Stone person at all. And I said, "What are these adults in the back? Are they teachers?" Because I thought, we need to engage them because they're just sitting in a chair, like at a desk, they're kids. And so these translators, they'd all kind of debate everything a little bit. But finally, one of them turned to me and on the camera and said, "Oh, they are sick." And I thought, "No, that's not right." I said, No. They don't look sick. What are those adults back there in the chair?" "Oh, so sorry. We, you know, we didn't explain that well." Now, this was a fourth or fifth grade classroom. Their child was sick. And at this school, it was the expectation that if you had a child sick, that some family adult took that seat.
Wow.
They are that serious. Because I said, "Oh, you won't believe it here." And they were always asking about Tennessee. I said, "Here in Tennessee, we have laws to make people go to school." Do you know, they laughed and they said, "Oh, Billy, we can tell you are so funny. And I thought, no, it's true. You know,
yeah.
They can't fathom the, you know, that we are not more driven than we are. But yes, now I have to admit, my kids were not sick very much. They came from a home where mom and dad both, mom was a school teacher and I believed in education fully. But even on a sick day, we didn't see anybody just sit in their seat.
Right.
You know, that is the competition. But anyway,
that's
the kind of work
indeed.
That I do. So from that story, I would tell you that even though the Space Foundation, oh, you know, they give me credit and, you know, and they really don't, that I get nothing from them salary-wise. If I have expenses, they pay some expenses. But I have learned a whole lot more from them than they'll ever get from me. And so that's been a wondrous group, and they were nice enough to pick me as their Teacher of the Year back in about 2013 or so. Of course, it could have been only one person that they were looking at because they only knew of one. But been a great group to work with. But the office is a little far away. Their corporate office is in Colorado, and they fly me out once a year to have a powwow. The coolest part. So I've talked about Japan. The coolest part was when I joined the Space Foundation. They said, "You're going to love your teacher because you're going to come out. We're going to give you 3 days of intensive training about us and what we do and kind of what they thought I was going to expect." I don't think they really understood the volume of work that I was already doing with teachers. And Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson at that time was on the board of directors of the Space Foundation. And
uh-huh.
for one day, Dr. Tyson was my teacher.
Very
so
exciting.
I get to tell people, I get to tell people, hey, you know, I like Cosmos. You know, I love the series because that's my teacher, you know. And I try not to go in too much detail that bless his heart, you know, he only had put up with me one day. But what a neat guy, you know, what a neat guy. So that's my claim to fame in education is that Dr. Tyson was my teacher one day.
There you go. All right. So you get to rub some elbows there with some of the biggest names out there. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Well, let's bring things back a little bit closer to home then here. So give us just a brief, run through of if what do you prefer? Do you prefer the planetarium kind of presentation, or you prefer to get them out underneath the stars and then really be able to show them things at the
Earth? It is. Now, and I think you and I both would agree, boy, if we could purchase weather so that on the nights we want to do things, we have good clear skies.
Yeah.
Now, I would tell you that is, not just to let them look in the telescope, but when I have kids, you know, we need to teach a lesson. So when it first gets dark, you know, we got to have a program to talk to them about so that we're, in essence, we're also killing time waiting for it to get a little darker. And then to take a big laser pointer, you know, and point out the constellations, some of those kids will never be the same. But the frustration of weather and all the variables, and I'm doing a star party while I'm a keynote speaker at a math conference in Kentucky this coming Friday. That'll be this Friday. And it's taking place at a state park, Rough River State Park, and almost in Evansville, Indiana. When I looked at it on the map, I thought, well, why did I say I'd go here? But I got so tickled back about 6-7 months ago when they contacted me about being the keynote speaker. They already knew quite a bit about me because I got so tickled. It's like, would you do our keynote? Well, yes, I said. Well, would you bring your telescope too? Now, these are a bunch of this is a math group of college professors, but they all want to look in the telescope too.
Sure.
But, you know, I've looked on the Weather Channel. I'm going to tell you that there's a good chance the only thing we're going to look at next Friday night in Kentucky is clouds. But the planetarium is a surefire thing, and I can take it right into the schools. it's, you know, it doesn't make a difference what the weather's like. And so you can do a real structured lesson, and you can count on things working the way they're going to. But there is something about being outside that, at least for me, you know, some people like camping and things like that. It's just something nice about being outside and looking up at the stars. And most people have looked up, but they don't know anything about what's up. And it doesn't take them long to pick up, you know, some of the basics. And to catch a few stories like Beetlejuice means armpit of the hunter. And, you know, and that Beetlejuice might have already blown up. You know, it may be a supernova already, you know, and we're all pointing at that same star. There is something magical about being outside. So the practical side of me goes, I would never do a star party. I would only do the planetarium. That's plenty. But the passion in me says, yeah, let's try. When schools contact me about doing one, you know, I try to tell them, it's going to be tough. You know, the odds of you having a clear night are way less than 50-50. And in some months of the year here in Tennessee, you know, they're only about 10%. You know, they're about 10%. And we're going to have a clear night. And a lot of the schools, most of them are rural that I visit. And they sell pizza, you know, they try to make money with it too, you know, because they're all trying to make money. But now, something that I did starting this year was that for the first time I had teachers, just teachers and their families, not students. I had two or three principals that said, you know, our teachers are so beat up and they are so depressed. We want to do something special for them and their families this fall. And so I had three different groups to the observatory here in the back, the lot behind my house where my observatory is set up. And they brought pizza. Well, one school brought covered dishes, but most of them bring a cooler of drinks and a pizza. And I do a little program, and then we just roll the roof off and we just look at things. And that, it doesn't reach the kids the same way, but it sure does make a lot of teachers happy. So
sure. Share, as we, my gosh, time flies. As we are getting close to already an hour here, why don't you, I know you've come a long way with your equipment since the 4-inch reflector. Can you share a little bit about what you use and your transportation, et cetera? Because I'm sure lots of folks would be interested in hearing about that as well. I've seen it, but I'm sure everybody would like to hear it.
Well, the telescope that I carry on the road with me, I have a trailer that goes behind my truck, and it's a covered box trailer, cargo trailer, whatever you call them. And although my wife really frowns at me when I buy all this stuff, it's probably like a whole lot of your listeners. They know that sometimes you just have to buy things and beg forgiveness. And I bought this trailer because I said, well, look, I've got to carry the planetarium. And I also do, it's kind of a science show. It's called the STEM show, but it's really like a Mr. Wizard show. I got to carry all of it. I just want to load everything in this trailer. I'm just going to drag it around behind my truck. And the telescope that I have is a 14-inch Meade, and then it's an LX600. And I wanted, when I was buying it, my wife and others go, well, you should just buy a little telescope. And could have ended up with the same views. There is no doubt, you know, what we're looking at, we're good. I wanted a wow factor because I'm still thinking about how desperate I was to look in a telescope. And I was afraid that if I showed up to a rather poor school and I just had a little telescope, that, and even if it was an excellent, high-grade, small telescope, they would only see it small. And I was afraid that that somehow or another it would be communicated in some way that, well, you guys didn't really matter that much, and so, you know, this is kind of what I got or something other. So I really splurged. I've got this 14-inch telescope, which is more than I can pick up just about. The older I get, the more challenging it is to carry. But that's my primary scope. Now, I do have a little solar scope, but now I have to admit I have gotten to where the planetarium and such eats up all my days. I did not go one school this year to look at the sun, not one. But during the day, we end up with that business of, well, it's a cloudy day today. Can we reschedule?
Right.
And schools are just under a lot of pressure. And I will tell you that the MEAT equipment is easy to set up, but maybe it's not been the LX600, because I have one in my little observatory, too.
Right.
And I have to do... They are more problem prone, I guess is the word, than they should be. And so I have an old LX200 12-inch Mead that I was going to sell. It was just mine. And when I bought the 14-inch for my observatory, I thought, well, I'm going to sell my 12-inch. Well, I never did get around to it, and I'm really glad I didn't. Now, I do believe I could have pushed it off the roof of the house, set it back up, and it would work. It must be bulletproof. And so I have to admit, I always carry it in the back of my wagon just in case. More than once I have gotten someplace and
really,
I've gotten jostled on the road, and that 600 will not even turn on. There'll be, more than once that's happened. And so
you have a backup plan, but...
Yes, the first time it happened, I will tell you, I was at a school in Murfreesboro, and I had no backup plan. I was trying to maneuver this telescope manually while people were looking at it, and it was a miserable night, and I thought, boy, this is never going to happen again. So I buy these little pull wagons, like overgrown kiddie wagons from Tractor Supply. I set all my telescopic equipment in them. I just take foam and holler it out in the shape of the telescopes. And I just roll that stuff in and out of the wagon. And when you're by yourself setting things up, you know, you've got to kind of have it organized to the point where you can do things without a lot of effort. So I can pull up someplace and be about ready to go in about 30, 45 minutes and have a fun night.
That's right. Yeah, it didn't take you very long to get things set up when we were at the coffee shop. That was so enjoyable. I can't wait till the warmer weather. And, man, I'd like to do a star party with you one time again. That was great.
Oh, well, that would be
some type of.
Well, we'll work on that. We'll have to work on that. And I look forward to being able to come back to the coffee shop. What a wonderful group of people that just came by and, you know, to take a look. And I thought, oh, this is so relaxed. You know, they just enjoyed it. I wasn't teaching a lesson.
They did.
Just,
that's
you,
right.
You know, if you look in the ice piece, if you got a question, I don't know all the answers, but, you know, I can talk a little something. And, of course, I could always point them to you if it was a hard question. I said, well, there's John. He's smart. Go ask him. And, because you do a wonderful service, John. I can't tell you how great it's been to talk to you today, but, wow, what wonderful work you do for your community and the people around you. Something very special.
Well, I tell you, it's a lot of fun. I don't even look at it as work, but I know what you mean. It can be. But, man, as you said, it all makes it worthwhile when somebody takes a look and they go, wow. It just, you know, you're no longer tired. You're no longer fatigued. You are rejuvenated. You're excited. You're like, you think that's cool. Why don't we swing the telescope over here to Jupiter?
Uh-huh.
Why don't we go ahead and check out this crater? And it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So I sure hope, I know I enjoyed it, and I want to thank you again, Billy, for coming on. I know you've been under the weather. I sure hope you recoup very fast, because I know you're going to be back on the road.
Yes, I will. I've got tomorrow that I'm going to do a little work for my trip Friday to Kentucky, but I'm headed to Lincoln County, Tuesday and Wednesday, taking the planetarium to a school called Flintfall and one in Highland Rim. And
there you go.
And, you know, just, but it's, just, you know, there are a lot of mornings, and you hit the nail on the head so well that I'm driving to a school and I'm going, now, why did I quit a good job for? I mean, now, why am I doing this? I am tired, and I think, what an idiot, an absolute idiot. But you just, I get so excited when the kids are so excited, you know.
Right.
I have the easiest job. You know, most teachers have to work to be excited and then try to get the kids to be excited, and I've got it made. All I have to do is show up, and they're excited. And the more excited they are, the better I feel. And I think, oh, yeah, I know now
exactly.
Why I came. Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, once again, I want to say thank you again, Billy. It was an absolute pleasure. We'll have to have you on again, but I promise it'll be a while. Let you get to recuperate.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it. And I look forward to seeing you face-to-face long before then.
Absolutely. Same here. All right, everyone, this will be a wrap for this episode of At the Eyepiece. As I said before, we will go ahead and have another episode coming up by the end, frankly, of this month. I'm going to try to get it out by the end of February. And again, we're going to be having two episodes every single month, and we are going to do our best to line up one featured guest every single month. So once again, here's wishing you plenty of clear skies so that we can all talk about it next time at the Eyepiece.
Thank you for listening to this episode of At the Eyepiece. If you would like to participate in a future show as a featured guest, or perhaps you have suggestions for future show topics, send me an email at theeyepiece@gmail.com. Check out our blog at theeyepiece.blogspot.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Just put in a search for At the Eyepiece. I'd like to thank George Wood for his bumper and exit music. This is 8-Bit Junkie, and we obtained that from PodSafeAudio.com. So here's wishing all of you plenty of clear skies so that we can all talk about it next time at The Eyepiece.